United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is now open according to law. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. First of all, I want to apologize to counsel. We had technical difficulties with our Zoom feeds this morning. We were all trying diligently several minutes before the top of the hour to log on to the Zoom video, but we're having difficulty today. So I want to thank you for your patience and waiting for us and you know, for your willingness to accommodate us with the new technology as a way to conduct oral argument. As a general rule, this has worked well for us during this pandemic. We are all anxious to get back to live arguments. I don't know exactly when that will be, but in the meantime, we really appreciate you all being here this morning to assist us with these cases. We only have two here to hear this morning. The first case is, we have several counts. I will say we're familiar with your cases. We've read the authorities cited in your briefs. We've looked at the record. So in the limited time available to you, you should feel free to go straight to the heart of your argument. We're probably going to have some questions for you. If you're in the middle of answering a question when your time expires, feel free to finish your answer, but do be mindful of the clock. When the clock expires, it is time to wrap it up so that we can move on either to the next counsel or to the next case. So our first case, Ramapal versus Amuyo. I'm sure I butchered the names, but Mr. Cole, you'll speak first to us.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Cole of the Cole Schatz Law Firm. I represent the appellant in this case, Benny Varmapov. He is appealing an order dismissing his second amended complaint based on failure to state a claim under Rule 12b-6 and failure to plead fraud with particularity under Rule 9b.
Well, it seemed to me that the problem in this case was, as the district court identified in its the first order of dismissal, was that this was a shotgun pleading. And the second go-around, the district court said that the new amended complaint had not cured the deficiencies of the first complaint, that it was, I know it may not have used the term shotgun pleading the second go-around, but by referring back to that problem, it certainly seemed to think that this was a shotgun pleading again. And I'll defer to the expert on on shotgun pleadings, Judge Choflat, but this looks like a shotgun pleading to me.
Your Honor, the order that dismissed the second amended complaint, as you noted, did not refer to it as a shotgun pleading. It did not refer to Rule 8. It merely referred to Rules 12b-6 and 9b. But in any event, the court's principal complaint about the...
But this is what the district court said. The district court said, despite three... Wait. Mr. Cole. The district court said, despite three attempts to file a proper pleading in this case, that the plaintiff has yet again filed a rambling, dizzying array of nearly incomprehensible pleading, which still fails to provide a short and plain statement justifying relief. He may not have used the buzzwords shotgun pleading, but how else am I to read that?
Your Honor, whether he used the words or not, we don't believe that the pleading constituted a shotgun pleading as pled in the second amended complaint. The district court's principal complaint about the first two pleadings was that they grouped defendants in a way that made it impossible for individual defendants to discern what it was they were alleged to have done. In the second amended complaint, it broke the defendants out.
Well, I mean, we've got in the Second Amendment complaint, you've got Mr. Cole, you've got nine counts in this complaint that incorporate almost all the factual allegations, that is paragraphs 21 through 269. Even though it would appear to me many of those allegations have to be irrelevant to some of those claims. And isn't that exactly the problem of not giving notice to the defendant as to what facts are supporting each count?
Your Honor, the facts alleged in those paragraphs do support the fraud and breach of fiduciary claims against the principal, I guess what I'll call the principal defendants, which are the three Emmywalls, Mr. Sasteel, and in each of those claims, the first set of paragraphs sets out a set of background facts that render the remaining allegations plausible. The remaining allegations set out a series of meetings and transactions in which all of these four defendants were involved, at which all of these four defendants spoke and made the same representations, and involving acts in which all four of them participated. It apprises each of them of exactly what their role was in the alleged scam. And it does so in a way that allows them to defend the case, and therefore it has met the notice pleading standard. Shotgun pleadings, as I understand them, and again, I'm not an expert in this, but shotgun pleadings are...
Whoever framed this complaint looks like an expert in it to me.
A shotgun pleading is either a pleading that incorporates all prior paragraphs into each successive count so that you can't tell which paragraphs and factual allegations support a particular count. That is not done here. None of the individual counts...
Let me stop you there. You have 249 factual allegations that you have incorporated in each of the nine counts. So why is that not done here? Each of the nine counts incorporates 249 factual allegations. So why isn't that exactly what you just said?
Your Honor, what I was saying was that the typical shotgun pleading incorporates each of the preceding counts into the successive counts.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me just ask you this then. But you agree each of your nine counts incorporates 200 factual allegations?
I don't have the complaint open in front of me, but if that's what it says, that's what it says.
And further, with regard to each of the counts, it doesn't identify which defendant is subject to all of those allegations. Sometimes it says names four defendants, but a lot of times it says all defendants through those 249 factual allegations. I'm trying to get you to understand the problem.
Your Honor, I'm not sure where in the complaint it incorporates all defendants with respect to any factual allegation. All of the factual allegations against the four principal defendants, the three Emmywalls and Mr. Sasteel, are alleged to have been either representations made by each of them or acts perpetrated by each of them. They did say the same things and they did perform the same acts. Again, this is a father.
Well, clarify this. Are all counts against all defendants?
No, Your Honor, they're not.
All right. How many of the nine counts are just against those four defendants?
I believe the first nine counts are against those four. I believe it is, if you'll bear with me, I have the complaint. The first four are claims against breach of fiduciary duty claims against those four defendants, one against each of the four. And they do have overlapping allegations because the four defendants were involved in the same actions and representations. The fifth claim is against is separate. The fifth claim does not incorporate all of the paragraphs referenced. It specifically incorporates paragraphs 123 through 134, 153, 190 through 198, and 225 through 232. So it's a completely different set of paragraphs. Similarly, count six, which is breach of fiduciary duty against Thomas Daugherty, incorporates specific subset of the paragraphs, 69, 92, 107 through 122, and so forth. Count seven is against Mr. Daugherty again, it incorporates specific paragraphs.
Six of nine counts incorporate all of the 249 allegations?
Your Honor, I would have to go through count by count, but I believe that each of the four fraud counts and each of the four breach of fiduciary duty counts against this set of four defendants incorporate that set of background facts, because the set of background facts applies to all four of them. All four were involved in all of the same acts and the same representations. They all acted together. They were all in the same place when all these things were done.
How much time is still my, the clock is frozen in my screen.
I have a minute and 7 seconds into the yellow.
Okay. Okay.
So he still has.
You got a minute to wrap it up, Mr. Cole, before you eat into your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I guess just in the time I have left, I'll address the fiduciary duty claim against the SOMO defendants. The district court took issue with the nature of the relationship between SOMO and Mr. Barmapov and contended that it was an arm's length borrower lender transaction or something of that ilk. The substance of the three agreements between the parties, which were the note, the floor plan agreement with the dealership, and the guarantee, is effectively that SOMO was acting as an agent loaning Mr. Barmapov's money to the dealership and monitoring those loans and enforcing those loans. That is a classic agency relationship. Agency relationships give rise to fiduciary duties. And for those reasons, we believe that the complaint adequately states a claim for breach of fiduciary duty against the SOMO defendants.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Cole, so we'll hear next from Mr. Silverstein.
Good morning, Your Honors, and thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Keith Silverstein, and I represent the defendants, the appellees, SOMO Financial Services, Roberto Habawi, and Ariad Somer. I'd like to pick up where Mr. Cole left off, and that is specifically addressing the issues of fiduciary duty, the relationship.
Do we even have to get to that? I mean, if this is a shotgun pleading, and the district court was right to dismiss it, despite multiple attempts to plead it, isn't that kind of the start and finish of it?
Well, that is correct, Your Honor. And I think that the court has aptly observed and identified the fact that of the initial 280 so paragraphs, the majority, the bulk of those paragraphs really are there because this is a case in which the plaintiff is claiming that the other parties vouched for the other individual, or that one party knew this person. And so the complaint goes through myriad and myriad of paragraph to explain this history and these community connections. But for purposes of pleading and for notice, the requirement to give notice is so that the defendants have an opportunity to defend, and the plausibility and the reason for the specificity of 9B is to demonstrate the plausibility of the pleading.
Before you get to 9B, it seems like Rule 8 requires a short, plain statement. And when you have paragraphs 21 through 269 being incorporated into nine different counts, we've got a lot of counts, several pages of counts dealing with criminal backgrounds of individuals. It's hard to make heads or tails of which of those factual allegations support which counts against which defendants and why they're being incorporated.
Well, the why has never been answered, Your Honors, and that's a correct point to bring up. The why of the prior criminal aspects and all of that has never been brought up. And so having represented the SOMO defendants, appellees at the trial level, it was of an extremely burdensome task, which necessitated multiple attempts to clarify and to simplify and to try and obtain a short and plain statement, which the lower court, which the district court made ample attempts and gave ample opportunity. And so this panel has correctly and astutely.
Your argument is that they pled too many facts. Is that it?
Well, it's not. Yes, it's that they pled unnecessary, irrelevant.
The reason I mention that is that if the complaint is too skimpy, then it's amenable to a motion for more definite statement because you can't respond. And if you have too many facts and you multiple defendants, then the question becomes, which facts do I respond to? So that's the problem with pleading too many facts.
Well, absolutely. And in this context where you have fiduciary duty and you have fraud, as a representing the defendants, it's important, in fact, it's required that we understand how it is that the plaintiff came to rely upon whatever the statements my client is accused of being made. But as you go through the 280 paragraphs, there are no specific allegations of what the SOMO defendants are alleged to have stated. There's only claims of what was not stated. And so, you know, here we are at the, you know, on appeal. And my job has been to comb through the 280 plus 300 paragraphs to try and discern what are the relevant facts. But that shouldn't be my job because that should have been done. And I think that that this court's, that an affirmance of the lower court's decision sets the bar and says that at the trial level, it is the plaintiff's obligation to set forth a clear and plain statement of the relevant facts to support the allegations.
And
without wanting to waste any of the court's time, I would yield the balance of my time because there are several overlapping arguments to Mr. Daugherty, who is next to argue on behalf of himself.
Well, I had Mr. Isaacs next.
Oh, my apologies.
That's okay. We appreciate you yielding some time. Mr. Isaacs, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I thought I was getting skipped there for a second.
Stephanie, you need to start his 3 minutes now. Just go ahead, Mr. Isaacs.
May it please the court. Your Honors, I represent John Obide, Palm Beach Auto Wholesale, LLC, and Terry Raffey. We're the folks who own the dealership and are accused of saying that the Amules and the other defendants were essentially good guys. And they're all an end all of the allegations against us. To follow up, and what they said is that they're trustworthy, with, I think everybody would agree on its face, is pure opinion. You don't get more opinion than these are trustworthy guys. But following up on the pleading problems, if you look at just the allegations against my client, which are very short, it's Raffey's alleged to have represented that the Amules, doesn't say which one, only two of the three are alleged to have worked for us. So under 9B, I'm still not sure who my client's supposedly talking about and who my client has this knowledge of past wrongful acts. They were trustworthy and would be future act good business partners, a future event. The second allegation, that the deal was sound. I don't think that's alleged to be untrue. More importantly, Raffi vouched for, I'm not sure what that means, the integrity of the amules. Again, I don't know which of the three they're talking about. And again, I'm not even sure my guys knew one of the three as alleged. And lastly, that Obaid's alleged to have said that the amules, again, plural, I don't know which one, were trustworthy and would treat future event Bar Mitzvah fairly. The trial court referenced another district court opinion in Tumerian versus Piccolo. The appellant in his brief, tried to distinguish, saying, well, in that case, looks like almost dicta, the trial court in Tumerian said that, well, there was no allegation of superior knowledge. And that's what differentiates, because it's almost the same exact fact pattern. Shockingly, there was software guys. They said, hey, these are legitimate, trustworthy software guys, getting to visit with them, et cetera. There's no allegation in all those hundreds of allegations and dozens of pages that says that my clients had superior knowledge. It's exactly the same as Tamarian, exactly. They say they have knowledge. They don't say it's superior. It's not alleged anywhere.
Okay, Mr. Isaacs.
Students are gone.
Your time's expired. I don't know if you saw the clock.
But, sorry, Your Honor. It's
frozen.
No, it's there. It's Mr. Daugherty's time's up on the board now. I apologize.
No, that's good.
Very fast.
That's fair. It does go fast. Mr. Daugherty.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Thomas Daugherty. I'm a licensed attorney, but I'm representing myself in this matter. I think, you know, the court correctly pointed out that the issues with the complaint that is shotgun pleading. We also have other problems with this complaint, and I think it could best.
Do we need to get to what the other problems are?
Well, I think we do, in the sense that the trial court felt it was necessary to address those issues too as an alternative problem with it beyond just the shotgun pleading.
Well, if I'm a district judge, what I want to do is I want to give the Court of Appeals multiple grounds for my ruling. But when it comes to us, all we need is one.
And true. And so, you know, the shotgun applies to everybody. There were three specific counts to me. And I think the best argument there is in the words of Senator Moynihan, where he said everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but not their own facts. And this is a case where they just blatantly just make things up. And I think that is what the court pointed out. Their allegations against me are three counts. One's a breach of fiduciary duty, aiding and abetting a breach of fiduciary duty, and civil conspiracy. And all these stem from some basically belief by Mr. Barmapoff that I was representing him at some point along the line here. The main concern that I have with those facts are, one, they just aren't facts, and they failed to disclose to the court evidence that would contradict that. And they had a duty to do that. For instance, they referenced a Mitsubishi letter saying that I said that I, you know, referring to it as my due diligence pack, but never attached a letter because the letter says completely the opposite. They claimed that Mr. Barmapoff thought that I was representing him, but failed to disclose to the court that he had his own attorney at the time. And there were emails to that effect. So there's a disingenuous argument there. And then not only did the court find it was shotgun pleading, they said that any statements against me for the most part were just conclusory allegations. And basically my mere existence and representation of Raffi Ford of Automotive somehow gave me knowledge of everybody's background, everybody's doings, whether I was there or not. That's part of the problem that the court had. And I think that the main issue for me is that there was clear, unequivocal, and dispositive evidence that was contrary to Mr. Barmapoff's claim that he and his counsel did not disclose to the court, failed to disclose it even when confronted with it, and then tries to keep it out of the record, saying that, well, it's not within the four corners of the complaint, when there's case law that provides that this court can consider those things. I think the fact that the complaint, one, just sets out too many facts to let anybody know exactly what they did. It doesn't say facts specifically to each person. And he also contradicts himself in his facts. He wants to say that he relied on each of these defendants, but then he also says that he relied on his own daughter from knowing these people. His own facts, which again are, as the court said, are dizzy array of facts, just completely contradict themselves all over the place and makes it impossible for anybody to know exactly what they're alleged to have done.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Togarty?
No, I think that's, you know, basically I think the court was correct in pointing out this is a shotgun pleading. The appellant was given multiple opportunities to cure this, and the court actually said, this is how you cure it. And they couldn't even follow the court's own, you know, direction. And when they do that, I think they are take the chance of being dismissed like they were properly dismissed.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Cole, you save 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to reiterate the notice pleading standard in the federal rules requires at a minimum that a party set out the facts that support the claims that are asserted. Rule 8A says you have to provide a short, plain statement of the facts. There is no rule that explicitly prohibits extraneous facts or renders a complaint dismissible due to extraneous facts. And I'm not saying that there are extraneous facts here.
You are familiar, though, with the precedents of this court about shotgun pleadings, I take it?
I am, Your Honor. And I believe there are four examples of shotgun pleading. We went through each of the four in the reply brief and explained why this particular pleading does not fall within any of the four. Again, the first, I believe one of them is incorporation of all prior counts into each subsequent count. That did not happen anywhere in this complaint. There is no one of the counts that incorporates the allegations or the contentions in any of the other counts. They all refer to the underlying general facts at the beginning of the complaint. One of the types of shotgun pleading is where you lump all defendants together and make general allegations against all defendants. Again, that is not what happened here. The allegations that are made against the four principal defendants, the Amuals and Mr. Sestile, are that each of them participated in each of these acts and that each of them made each of these statements.
Well, we've said that the most common type of a shotgun pleading is a complaint containing multiple counts where each count adopts the allegations of all preceding counts, causing each successive count to carry all that came before and the last count to be a combination of the entire complaint. You've got 9 different counts that incorporate virtually all the factual allegations, paragraphs 21 through 269. Why doesn't this complaint fall into the most common of the four types?
Your Honor, because exactly as you just said, the description that you gave of that type of shotgun pleading is that each of the counts incorporates the prior counts. In this particular pleading, none of the counts incorporate any of the prior counts. The allegations and contentions in count one are not incorporated into any of the subsequent counts. And throughout the entire complaint, that's the case. The issue that is sought to be avoided in the type of shotgun.
Yes, but let me ask you this. It seems to me, though, that the thrust of what Judge Pryor read, yes, you're right. This complaint doesn't say I incorporate in count 9 everything in count 8 or everything in count 7. So let's assume for sake of argument you're correct about that. But what it does do, and you admit, is it incorporates 249 paragraphs of factual allegations into the counts.
Many
of the accounts, let's say that.
Only certain counts. And I think if you look at those counts, there's a common thread. There are.
Into all of them.
No, that's not.
No. 21 through 269. 21 through 269.
I'm sorry. I missed the last piece you were saying.
21 through 269 appear to be incorporated in all. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So
we're having technical difficulties still.
So approximately, and I'm sorry if I'm speaking over it. I thought you were finished.
No, we are all having technical difficulties. It's okay.
There are effectively four defendants against whom the same claims are pled, and that's, again, the three Amuals and Mr. Sasteel. Against each of them, the fraud claim and the breach of fiduciary duty claim do incorporate that set of paragraphs, because that set of paragraphs is believed to be relevant to each of those claims against each of those four defendants. With respect to each of the other defendants and each of the other claims in the complaint, the counts specifically enumerate the paragraphs that are believed to be relevant to those particular claims. None of the claims against Somo, Mr. Daugherty, Mr. Rafi, Mr. Obaid, or the Somo defendants incorporates all of the allegations from the beginning of the complaint that are incorporated against the four principal defendants. For that reason, we believe it is not a shotgun pleading of the type that Your Honor described. Thank you very much for hearing us today.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. We have your case.